Part of the fabric of history in the American West is gold mining. Roughly a third of a million people flocked to California for the gold rush. Notice that California became a state 10 years before Oregon did, largely because of all those people flooding in looking for riches. Few of them found them. Gold mining is hard work, but it can still be rewarding, as we hear in this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon. Glenn Wadstein spent a decade and a half working a gold claim in the Sterling Creek drainage of the Applegate Valley. He's our guest in the studio. Glenn, good to see you.
How you doing?
Good. Good to have you here. Maureen Battistella compiles Stories of Southern Oregon for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive at... Yes, Southern Oregon University. I think we said Southern Oregon enough times now. She's here as well. Maureen, always good to see you.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So, Glenn, I understand you had mined for a while before you even moved to Oregon. Is that right?
Yeah, it's been part of my life almost my entire life. Mm-hmm. As a child, my mom would take us out to the desert, and we'd poke around the old diggings. Mm-hmm. So it's been part of my life. Before I moved to Southern Oregon, I lived in a place called Sawyer's Bar, which is on the Salmon River. In Siskiyou County, and I pretty much learned how to mine there through trial and error.
A lot of error?
A lot of error, I'll tell you. And, I mean, now and then you do good, but I'll tell you, we went through some really tough winters. You know, water's high and you couldn't mine, and so I had to learn a different style of mining other than working in the creek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how did you start? I mean, what scale are we talking about? We're talking about with big machines? Are we talking about with small pans?
I started out with really a gold pen, a screwdriver, and a pair of tweezers.
That was it?
Yeah, that was it.
Old-time placer mining.
I'd walk all up and down the creek and search the bedrock and pan it. And the slang term for that is called sniping. Mm-hmm. And I would do that. And ultimately, I'm looking for pockets. And you'd find a couple, you know, and some were big, some were small. Some of the notable pockets I found would throw a couple of ounces. But back in those days, gold was just legal to own. And I remember selling ounce of gold for $125.
Boy, that seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Oh, boy.
What is it worth now, $3,000?
Yeah, $1,300,
okay. Yeah, so big difference. Did you learn a bit about geology along the way, about the ways to look at the landscape and figure out where gold might be?
Had to. Absolutely. It was a must-do. Not only that, I had to learn about archaeology at the same time. The old-timers, the original gold miners, you had to look at the work that they did, interpret it to determine where they left off, what they did, to see if the ground that you're going to work was any good, whether it'd been worked or not.
So you could kind of see where they had stopped and continue from there, or would
exactly.
You go back and work?
You know, if they stopped, why did they stop? And then also you had to take into account what method of mining that they used, because that would determine how I mined it. Mm-hmm. So awful lot depending on what the old-timers did.
So what made you decide to leave Sawyer's Bar and end up settling at the McKee Bridge area of the Applegate Valley?
I'd finally gotten fed up with the mining claims on federal ground. I was done. In fact, I was going to quit mining altogether. And I was going to build a mining plant that was affordable, that a small miner could afford and actually make money with. In developing the plant, we needed a place to test it. Sterling Creek was the place to test it, and after testing, we looked in a box, and holy cow, look at that, there's gold.
How big?
Well, there was a couple of fairly large nuggets, you know, pinky-sized... nice little pieces of gold, and that was just from testing the plant. We weren't testing the ground.
This was just to make sure the equipment worked.
Yeah, so, one thing led to another, and we made a verbal agreement, and just the operation started.
Glenn Wadstein is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He's this month's edition of Stories of Southern Oregon. Maureen Battistella is back with us as well, the curator of the Stories of Southern Oregon project from the Southern Oregon Digital Archive. You've got questions or comments, please join us on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 to join by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So let me understand the plant you're talking about. Did you essentially design a whole new way of mining or something?
Well, no, I came up with this design from a trip that I made up into the Arctic Circle. The miners up there, they are limited because of the fuel that has to be packed into the Arctic Circle and stuff. So they needed a plant that was high volume, low maintenance, and it didn't have any moving parts. And I thought, whoa, that's perfect. You know, I mean, because most of us small miners, we're kind of working on a shoestring.
Mm-hmm.
So I took what I saw there and some previous experience I had with another mine, and from memory rebuilt that design. It's called a skid plate.
So you've described that mining operation as a sand and gravel operation, and that's different than the hydraulic mining that occurred a century, two centuries ago in that location. Can you describe the difference?
Well, the old days, the original miners, they brought in with the big hydraulic cannons that just fired water.
The giants. And
blasted hillsides out, and, you know, it just... an environmentalist nightmare.
In fact, if you look in places still, like Galise Creek,
yeah.
If you go up the lower reaches of Galise Creek, you can see those soft rumbles in the landscape, and that's because the hillside got washed away into the creek.
Yeah, and I mean, just a mess. What we wanted to do was build a little self-contained plant and operate it like a sand and gravel operation. You put a sand and gravel operation... They separate the rock from the sand. It goes to make concrete and stuff like that. The only step that we were going to add into it was the recovery of gold. And so that's how this plant came about. It just added an extra step to do that.
Where does the term skid plate come from?
This, Alaska. The University of Alaska put out some books that showed some of the original designs of skid plates back in the 1930s. And... I used their formulas, and so actually in a roundabout way, University of Alaska was a great help in designing this. And so I give kudos to whoever wrote those engineering books.
So how did you find the land on in the Sterling Creek drainage to work? And I understand it had been worked at some point in the past?
Sterling Mine is a very, very old and has been a productive mine throughout its inception. And... the way that I got involved in it is there was a group mining in there, some young people, and they clearly didn't have a clue what they were doing. And since they were already mining and they had a water source, and everything at Sterling Mine was self-contained, so nothing was put out. Since they had a self-contained water source, it was perfect for us to set up the plant. And we actually did it with their assist, and one of the young people there assisted quite a bit. But it clearly was over their heads, and so we ended up kind of bulldozing our way through there, I guess.
Literally, though, I mean, this is you're talking about some heavy equipment here. This is far from the screwdriver and pliers operation you started with on the Salmon River.
Yeah, I had bought an old cat, and I bought it because I found a giant nugget on the Salmon River, and I sold it for a considerable amount of money, and I used that money to buy this old cat, and I bought an old drag line.
What were their names?
The old cat was named as Christine.
Uh-huh.
And why?
Well,
we don't have to go there.
Yeah, that's all right. One of the guys played a trick on me. We used to have the Sony Walkmans and uh-huh. listen to the radio, and I'd listen to soft rock, and every morning I'd go to jump on my cat and turn on my Sony. And it would be 1950s music, and I'm going, what the heck is this? I never put. They kept doing it, and so they started making jokes about the Stephen King Christine movie, and you know, Christine was at night, rocking and rolling, and anyways.
Did you have a name for the drag line, too?
One drag line was called Pam, and named after one of the workers. She was a very hard worker, and this was a really good drag line. And one thing I'm going to say about the equipment is, other than the cat, and the cat was older than I was, all the equipment that we used at the mine had been rescued from scrap iron, from scrap piles. Wow. It was all had for junk. In fact, in one of them, we had a big giant machine called a scraper. Its name was Old Ugly, and it was ugly. When my partner and I found it, the scrappers were literally lighting their torches to starting to cut it up. And we asked him if it ran, and he says, well, yeah, it runs, but say no more. So
you fixed all that equipment.
Constantly.
Yeah.
I gather that on an average day, about 2 hours were reserved for cleanup and maintenance?
2 hours in the morning did maintenance, and then 2 hours at the end of the run was for cleanup and to reload the pit for the next run.
So what was a day's work like? I mean, for folks who don't really understand, this, again, is a larger operation than just panning for gold on a creek. And were you even close to a creek at this point?
No, we weren't even close to a creek.
That's the difference from the old mining, because they used to run sluices. They used to run conduits from Sterling Creek into this area in order to do the mining. And that's what's so remarkable about Glenn's operation, that he really maintained the environment, maintained the land, and didn't destroy it with those big hoses. He returned everything. It's a meadow now.
Stories of Southern Oregon is featuring Glenn Wadstein, a gold miner from the Applegate Valley this month. He worked the Sterling Mine from 1986 to 2001. He's in the studio with us. So is Maureen Battistella, who compiles stories of Southern Oregon for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive. So, where'd the water come from then? I mean, lots of water involved in this operation.
The creek, groundwater, and it was only there for a limited time. So the mining was only for a limited time. And now, we didn't actually operate the plant every day. A lot of days were spent prepping the material to get to the plant. So we might operate the plant 2 or 3 days a week, and the other days would be stripping the dirt or you know, doing all the prep. And so, you know, when we mined, we would be lucky to get a 6 hour or a 10 hour run in. And
was it clean work, Glenn?
Pretty muddy, I'll tell you. Pretty muddy.
I've seen pictures where you're just coated head to foot with clay.
The old red clay, boy, that...
That's sticky. That old sticky.
And stain. Yeah, you don't wear any white there.
No, it doesn't stay white for long anyway. It looks like a fairly intensive operation, equipment and water and people. I mean, so how much stuff went through the plant in a day, and how many people did it take to run this?
Excuse me. It took... ideally, we had 5 people, and that includes me. And we would run 50, 55 yards an hour. Mm-hmm. And we would, like I say, 6 to 8 hours a day. But, and that's when we operated the plant. When we didn't operate the plant, it was only 2 of us.
We have an email here from Mike in Medford. He says, I pan at the designated BLM sites in Gold Hill and Sterling Creek. I assume these places have been picked bare. And is all that gold flake I see just fool's gold? Either way, it's relaxing and fun. Thanks for the great history, says Mike in Medford.
All right. if it moves easy in the water, it's not gold. Gold is heavy. It doesn't move. Even flakes are the last thing to move. And really, panning and stuff, it is all about fun. That's what I do for fun, even when I ran the big operation.
Really? You were still panning for fun, even off to the side?
It's nothing more relaxing than listening to the water and just taking a nice day, you know.
So there's stories that Glenn would sit in the evening and watch the television and pan in front of the television for hours and hours and hours.
Have to pan concentrates.
It really is a way of life for you, isn't it?
It has been, yeah, pretty much my whole adult life.
So we talked about the water and the size of the operation. First of all, how long did the big stuff last? You talked about pulling out chunks the size of your pinky before you even started the mine.
It generally, we got, I think it was 25%, 30 to 25% of big stuff, what we call pickers. And the rest was matchhead and smaller gold dust. And, of course, the majority is gold dust. And that's really tough to recover. So with the mining, you don't just mine. Then once you're done mining, you have all these concentrates, and you have to get the gold out of it. And so you end up with 200 or 300 pounds of heavy black sand, and you have to extract the gold out of it. And so we had concentrating tape. We had a little lab set up to do the concentration work and recover gold, and we could smelt it and stuff like that.
Oh, you could. I was going to ask if you did any melting there. So you get the did you get the impurities out and all that?
No, we didn't try to refine it. We just to smelt the fine gold to make it so that you can handle it. So it's called little door bars.
Mm-hmm. Grab your headphones because it looks like we have a question here from Tom in Jackson County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Glenn Wadstein and Maureen Battistella.
Hi. I was just curious if your guests had heard anything about the Soda Mountain mineral vein.
I'm sorry, I don't. Mm-hmm.
So something up there at Soda Mountain, obviously. What did you heard about it, Tom? Tom, you there?
Oh, it supposedly runs from Soda Mountain almost down to Medford, down to Rocky Point, I think.
Okay, that's so as a miner, you probably hear these stories from time to time because this is often what motivated people to come and look for minerals, wasn't it? This rumor about some great big vein of something.
Yeah. What he's talking about is a mineralized zone, and there's kind of still a lot of debate on mineralized zones. So I can't really give you an answer on that. I've kind of stepped back over the years, and it's kind of a vague memory anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were really focused, Glenn, focused on that Sterling Mine claim.
Yeah.
So we had talked about the big finger-sized chunks. There's a series of 15 things in this tray in front of me. We just snapped a picture of it for Facebook as well. So what am I looking at? Because some of this is coins, not just gold chunks.
Yeah, in the sluice box, occasionally we'd pick up other things other than gold, and we kind of got to the point where I looked forward more to finding the other things than I did the gold. To me, the gold was diesel fuel. That was all I cared about, diesel fuel and welding rods.
Keeping it going.
One of the coolest things that I did find at Sterling Mine was a 1793 Spanish real. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, what the heck is this? And so I took it down to World Coin, and what they told me was in the early days of the gold rush, the majority of the money used on the West Coast was Spanish. And therefore, that's why I found it. American United States currency hadn't really reached the West Coast in any amount. So they were still using a lot of Spanish gold.
Wow, that is just amazing. And 1793, that's some great stuff.
To give you a thing, that's right around the town Marie Antoinette lost her head.
Oh, well, that is indeed. So let's talk about the what happened to the site once you were done with it. Because I'm sure people thinking, oh boy, did they leave some big pile of tailings and other mess there? Or what was your environmental ethic in doing your mining work?
Well, we tried to do a good job. We didn't want to leave any terrible holes or anything like that. And when we finished up, I went to go level the ground out because the property had been sold, and it went to a new owner. And so the property owner kicked in some extra diesel for me, and we brought out the cat, and we leveled off everything as nice and clean as we could, and it made it so that the new property owner liked it. And so when I left it, it was flat and level. The ponds were there, nice and watery, and it was good. Because when I first showed up at Sterling Mine there, I mean, it was stacks of tailings, and it was just destruction from what had been done by the old days. So
you left it better than you found it, you're saying?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
He had a method, I think, where he pulled off the top layer to uncover the ore, and then recovered the ore and then returned the top layer. So everything was left flat and in a normal state, not like those hillocks that you described
right, with
before.
Right, with it from the hydraulic mining. There is a YouTube video already extant of Glenn talking about his mining operation that we have linked to at our website. So that's the initial item for the Southern Oregon Digital Archives. Now, I notice on that video you have a lot of women on your crew. There's quite a story there, I understand.
Well, yeah, we would only hire part-times, and actually wasn't hire. It was kind of a part-time partnership kind of thing. That's how you got paid. And we were having a hard time getting them to show up on time. I mean, we'd spend a couple of days prepping the ground and get ready to mine, and these guys just kind of, well, they'd show up not sober. And we kind of started getting a problem with that. Sometimes they wouldn't even show up at all. So finally, I just went, the heck with this. I know a group that wants to work, and they work good. And by God, we canned a crew and hired women. And they worked great. My favorite employee was a woman named Pam, and she was a working pistol. I ain't kidding you, man.
Worth naming a drag line after, right?
Yeah.
So what ended things, and did this turn out to be a lucrative way of life for you?
Well, the whole time that we mined, I also had summer job. You know, I used to run heavy equipment,
mm-hmm.
and the first 2 years, anything we made went into the equipment, and then the price of gold dropped, and then we just. My two partners went their way, and so I would just mine for a week, a year, something like that, to shoot something towards the property owner.
All right, 1986 to 2001, Glenn Wadstein working the Sterling Mine in the Sterling Creek drainage of the Little Applegate Valley. Glenn Wadstein is this month's Stories of Southern Oregon. Maureen Battistella found him and brought him to the studio. Thank you both for being here today.